So what we're going to do today is we're going to, in a workshop environment, look at how to identify great businesses, how to avoid the bad businesses, and how to value them. Now, many of you have asked those of you who've seen me on Sky Business or on CNBC or on ABC News at midday will know that I have an ability to pretty much value any company. Well, actually, there's no exceptions. I've got a value for every single company that's listed on the Australian market. I've got values for all of them going back a decade. I've got values for most of them going forward 3 years. If at some stage you wanted to know the value of any Australian company, I could pretty much help you with that. But you can do it yourself, and that's what this session's all about. If you miss something, I've sent off one of the staging connections, one of the IT people. I've sent them up to my room to go and grab some forms for my book. And if you miss anything, it's all in there and in much more detail than I can present in the course of an hour today. Okay, importantly, this isn't advice. Okay, as I said yesterday, I don't know your personal financial circumstances. If I mention some companies, and I will mention lots of companies in this session, if I mention some companies, it's not a recommendation for you to go and do anything with that. Okay, this is my book, and I'm very, very proud to say that most of you who have ordered it, when you get home from the AIA conference, it should be in your letterbox. It's been delivered a week or so earlier. Thanks very much. So it's been a week delivered a week or so earlier, which I'm really pleased about. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to do three things. We're going to avoid bad companies, we're going to uncover great companies, and we're going to learn how to pay less for them. Now, some of you will know that that I don't follow charts. That's not to say that you shouldn't. That's merely to say that I don't find that I have any need for them because of the way I invest. But there are problems with the way I go out and buy companies. I'll buy a company at a discount to intrinsic value, and it might drop 50%. Now, that doesn't worry me very much, but it might not be appropriate for you. And if you can't stomach it, well, maybe a chart might help you decide, well, that's still in a downtrend, and therefore I'm going to stand aside and wait till it's turned around. So if you've got some method of using a chart that helps refine entries and exits and it works, then go ahead and combine it with what I'm going to talk about today. Okay. Part one, the first thing I'd like to talk to you about today is the extraordinary secret to picking great companies. And the extraordinary secret to picking great companies is to avoid bad ones. Now, hands up if you've ever had a dud stock in your portfolio. Right, just keep your hands up for a second. Now, people at the front, turn around and have a look. All right, put your hands down. Hands up if you've never bought a dud company. Okay. Let me open this up just for a minute, just for a bit of entertainment value. Who had their hand up in the front row here? Hands up. Okay. What was the dud company you had that comes straight to mind? Telstra. Okay. Hands up if you own Telstra. All right, very good. That's terrible. That's appalling. Okay. All right. Hands up if you still own T1. Does anyone know still? You're suckers for punishment, aren't you? Okay. All right. And another one, down in front, right up the back. Put your hands up again if you owned a dud. Yep, what's the company? Timbercorp. Okay. How did you happen to get into Timbercorp? Voodoo science. Okay, very good. I won't be doing any rain dances today. Okay. And one more over the back. Yep, up the back. Babcock and Brown. I'm very proud to tell you that I've never owned any of those companies. Okay? No. Now, let me say this. I have avoided those examples by focusing on good businesses. So what I'd like to do is show you how to avoid the bad businesses first. And there's going to be a couple of examples. Okay, so Warren Buffett said that businesses, the ones you want to own, are businesses earning good return on equity while employing little or no debt. So two things there, high rates of return on equity or good rates of return on equity and little or no debt. Now, for those of you who don't know what is return on equity, imagine you take your equity, your money, and you put it in a bank account. You get a return of 6.4% on your equity. The interest rate in a bank account is the return on equity of the bank account. The same is true when you put your money, invest your money into a business. Not into a stock at the share price, but into a business. So the equity on the balance sheet is the money that has been put in by its shareholders or left in terms of retained earnings. So it's your money in the company. The profit the company generates after tax is the return on that equity. We're interested in high rates of return on equity. We're also interested in companies with little or no debt. Now, most people that I speak to say, well, surely, Roger, there can't be that many companies with little or no debt. You'd be surprised at how many companies have no debt. You'd be surprised at how many companies have net cash. In other words, when you subtract the debt from the cash, there's still cash left over. There's a surprising number of companies that meet this criteria. Okay, so here's a mystery company. Now, some of you may guess what this company is, and I'll leave that to the end, and I'll ask you to tell me what you think it is. But this is how I go about, and I think it's a really simple way of doing it, and Buffett came up with this and gave a lecture at Columbia University on this very subject. And if you go to YouTube, you'll see the lecture. You can actually, it's been filmed, and it was given many, many years ago. But what he did is he described how he assesses a company without actually giving any tables or charts. And I think he was probably reading at the lectern. You couldn't see it. But I think he was probably looking at a value line, a page out of the value line book, which is in the United States. And we don't have it in Australia. The closest thing we've got to it is probably Morningstar's shareholder compendium. Some of you may buy that. Comes out every year, every 6 months, is it? Every 6 months, about $100. Is that right? It's about $100, covers 500 companies. So in that is 10 years of historical data for the top 500 companies. Now, I suspect Buffett was looking at something like that at the time when he was describing the example that he described, and it's from that that I've derived this. So if you have a look at the year 2000, we're going to start a company. I'm going to hand out an information memorandum. I'm going to hand out the information memorandum to all of you, and we're going to raise some money, and together we're going to start a business. Okay, we're going to go into this business together. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to raise $2.8 billion. We're going to put $2.8 billion into this business. That's how much equity we need to put in to get this business going, to kick it off. Okay? And then, in our first year of operation, we're going to earn $517 million. Now, is that a good return or not a good return on the money we've put in? It's a good result, isn't it? It's a result of that 17.45% or thereabouts. Okay, two decimal places. And we talked about that last night, didn't we? Okay, just looks better to me with two. That's the only reason there's two. Okay, so that's a good return. You can't get that in a bank account. So encouraged by that, we continue to run the business. And every year I get up in front of you and every year I tell you how we're going. And over 10 years, we have good years and we have bad years, but after 10 years, we're earning a profit of $267 million. So it's almost half of what we were earning 10 years ago. Is that good or bad? That's bad. Okay. What if I also told you that in the 10 years and every year that I got up in front of you to talk about the performance of the business, I requested that you reach into your pockets, grab your checkbook, write a check, and put in some more money. And in addition to the $2.8 billion that I raised from you in the first year, we've increased that by another $2.9 billion. So we've now put in $5.8 billion of our equity. Good or bad? Bad. Now, the first year that we were running this business, we also went to the bank. So after I collected back all the information memorandums and all the checks in the first year, I went rushing out the door. I didn't jump on a plane to Spain. I went down to the bank. And I asked the bank for a loan, and I asked for a $3.1 billion loan. And the bank, being the intelligent people that they are, they gave it to me. Now, in the ensuing 10 years, and every year I've been talking to you, I haven't needed to get your approval for this, but I've also borrowed some more money. And in fact, I've increased that borrowing by another $2.4 billion. So we now have $5.5 billion of debt, $5.8 billion of our money in it, and we're earning half of what we were earning 10 years ago, and the return on our equity is 4.6%, which is less than what we can get in a bank account. Good or bad business? Okay, bad business. Who said good? No, you are. Keep an eye on you. You'll go to the back again with your hands on your head. It was him. I know. I did. Yeah, okay. So it was you this time. Well, I'm going to have to split you guys up. You can't sit together. All right? Okay. Might have to put you on this side. Right. Okay. So there's a couple of numbers here. There's a couple of numbers, isn't there? This number here, 4.6%, is the return on equity in 2010, and it's been in decline since 2000. What's really interesting is if you look at the loss that every additional dollar that we've put in has earned, it amounts to a decline of 8.5%. So every dollar that we put in goes down by 8.5 cents. It's a loss. So every additional dollar that you've put in over the last 10 years has lost 8.5%. Do you want to put more money into this business or not? No. But the share price is going up. Well, that's an interesting thing that you mentioned, Alison. A comment that I often get is, Roger, but you know, the share price has been going up. I could buy here and sell there and it might be good. Well, I just don't, look, my response to that is I just don't play that game. I'm just not in the business of betting on share prices. If I buy shares in this business and they go up, well, it's tantamount to me betting on black or red, because all I'm doing is betting on up or down. I know the business is a bad business. Warren Buffett said, if you're not prepared to own the whole business, don't buy a little piece of it. In other words, don't buy a share. And he also said, if you're not prepared to own the whole business for 10 years, don't be prepared to buy a little piece of it for 10 minutes. So if you're not prepared to own the business, don't buy the shares in that business. It seems like a fairly simple thing to do. Okay. And it's really simple, I think, to work this out. Let's look at it graphically. So there's the 250. That's a number that's really important. So the profits have declined $250 million. We divide that by the $2.9 billion of extra capital that's been put in, and we get the 8.5% or thereabouts. So here is the profit in 2000. Here is the profit in 2009. Here's the equity that we put in at the start. Here's the equity we've put in since. Here's the debt in 2000. Here's the debt now. Okay? And there's the return on equity. It's a bad business. It's a business that you know well. Okay? That's Qantas. Who thought it was Qantas? Hands up. A couple of you thought it was Qantas. Now, Qantas is a business that we know well. It provides a service that we love because it takes us to our loved ones. It takes us on holidays. It brings us together. It takes us apart if we need to be apart. You know, it does everything we want it to do, but it doesn't make money. And in investing, what we're trying to do is make a profit. Now, how does it survive? How does it do that? Well, it survives by virtue of the fact that people keep putting money into it. It survives because the hat gets passed around and the hat is filled. As long as the hat comes back full, then they've got more money to buy new planes. And now that you know this, have a look at future announcements made by Qantas. Invariably, they'll talk about new planes that they've bought and how efficient these new planes are, and how they can seat more people in more comfort with more entertainment. They get there faster using less fuel. But those planes that they buy are much more expensive than the old ones they replace. And so they need more money to constantly buy those new planes. They need more money from the bank and they need more money from you. If the hat comes back empty, no airline. But don't worry, there'll be another airline to take its place. Because invariably there's a Formula One driver or there's, a rock star or someone who wants their face on the tail of a plane. So that's the other problem with the industry. There's plenty of competition. Okay. What about this business? We talked about it yesterday. I'm going to show you where we get this data, the data from for these numbers. Amcor is a business that some of you own in your portfolio. This is the profit and loss statement for Amcor, and this is the number I'm interested in, $211.7 million for 2009. So that's what I'm after. That's the profit figure. From the balance sheet, I'm interested in the total equity attributed to normal ordinary shareholders, which is $3 billion. I'm interested in the debt as well, $1.87 billion of long-term debt and just under $1 billion of short-term debt. So one's from the current account and one's from the non-current account or the non-current liabilities. We put the $211 million, and we divide that by the equity, and we get a return on equity of 7%. And that goes into this table here, and this is the table I showed last night. So we've got profit that's gone from $290 million to $211. Equity, we started with 1.7, we've put in another 1.2. Return on equity has declined from 16%, which was reasonable at the time, to now 7%, not much more than what we can get in a bank account. A term deposit gives you 6.4% with no risk. There's huge amounts of risk in owning a business, and there's enormous risk in owning a business that's listed on the stock market. So you want to get a return on equity which is higher than what you can get in a guaranteed bank account. It just makes sense. Okay, and the debt has gone up as well from $1.4 billion to $2.9 billion. If I demonstrate that graphically, you can see I'm rushing through this one because you saw it yesterday. There's the profit in 2000. There's the profit in 2009. There's the equity we put in 10 years ago. And the equity we put, does that look a bit like Qantas? It does look a lot like Qantas, doesn't it? There's the debt back then and the debt now. In fact, that's almost identical to Qantas in terms of its profile. You said Qantas was a bad business. Why should this be any different? Its metrics look identical. Okay. And there's the return on equity. Again, looks a lot like Qantas. It's been in decline. You don't want to own a piece of this business because you're not prepared to own all of it. You don't want to own it for 10 minutes because you don't want to own it for 10 years. Warren Buffett has a fantastic quote. He said, "Time is the friend of the wonderful business, but time is the enemy of the poor business." The longer you hold shares in a mediocre or poor business, the more likely your returns from the shares will mimic the return from the business. So time is the enemy of a poor business. You don't want to own it for a long time. Okay. Ben Graham's quote again from last night, "In the short run, the market is a voting machine reflecting a voter registration test that requires only money, not intelligence or emotional stability." We are not rational with money, are we? No? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? You gladly lose $10,000 or $20,000 in the stock market, but the next day you go to the supermarket and you tell your partner they can't have that cereal because that one's on special and you'll save 50 cents. We are entirely irrational with money, completely irrational with money. We do it in the stock market as well, but with a lot more money. We're not consistent with the way we assess companies. We're not consistent with the reasons for buying them. We're not consistent with the reasons for selling them. We're just not rational about it. And I'm suggesting that you should be. And it's not hard to be if you know what to look for. Okay. So let's have a look at the share price for Amcor and the intrinsic value. They have followed the performance of the business over 10 years. Okay. The next one, primary healthcare. Anyone heard of primary healthcare? Hands up if you own shares in primary. That's good, isn't it? Okay. Hands up if you own shares and you're scared to admit it. Anyone? No. Okay, well, let's have a look at the numbers. Can I just ask, by the way, up the back, guys, have you brought that wad of nuts? Oh, they're over there, are they? Are you able to just take the bunches and pass them on so that, is that okay? No, just hand the whole bunch to the bloke who should be up the back with his hands on his head. And he can take one and pass them on. That's fine. Okay. So let's look at primaries numbers, guys. They're a little bit different here. A little bit different because you'll notice the profits have gone up. Have a look at that first row. The profits have gone, thanks Alison, the profits have gone from $5 million to $108 million in the space of 9 years. That's a pretty good result, don't you think? You'd be happier owning that than you would owning a business whose profits halved. Okay. So here we've got a business that on the surface looks good, and many analysts focus on the earnings growth. Many analysts will have a look at the profile of the earnings and say, well, look, it's grown by X percent a year, and we expect it to grow by another X percent in the future, and therefore, the earnings growth looks good, you should buy the shares. But something's missing, isn't it? Because you're looking at the profit that's coming out of the business, but as a business owner, anyone who owns a business, hands up if you own a business. Yeah? As a business, you know, those profits, you don't get to keep all of those profits. Some of those profits have to be reinvested in the business. You're interested not only in the profits that come out of a business, you want to know how many dollars are going to go into the business to generate those profits. And so that's what we're doing here. We're looking at how much money we've had to put in. Well, in the year 2000, we put in $110 million to generate $5 million. Yes, the profits have grown. Look how much additional capital we've had to put in to get to those profits. We started with $110 million, but then we've written checks for another $2 billion. We've injected as shareholders another $2 billion of our capital in order to see these profits grow. And what's happened to the return on equity in that time? Well, return on equity has gone from 4.5% to 5.1%. It's basically unchanged. And what's been the return on the additional $2 billion that we've put in? Well, the difference here is $103 million. The difference there is $2 billion. It's 5.1%. It's less than what we can get in a bank account. Is that good or bad? That's bad. It's not as bad as some of the other examples I've given you, but it's still bad. You don't need to do much more research. You're opening up the Financial Review and talks about primary, you can turn the page. You don't need to read the article. Think about the time you've saved. Every time you save an hour in your life and you turn a page, now when you read an article about primary and you can turn the page, you can say, thanks, Rog. Just thanks, Rog. And just send me 10 cents. That's all I want. It's not a huge amount of money. Just send me 10 cents every time that happens. Okay? All right. So, and look at the debt. The debt's gone from $31 million to $1.4 billion. We've borrowed an additional $1.4 billion. So additional capital from banks and from us, $3.4 billion to produce $103 million of additional profit. It strikes me question. You could look at the return on capital, except you remember earlier Buffett said, look for companies with good rates of return on equity and little or no debt. I'd argue this doesn't have little or no debt. If for a company... Well, the return on capital will be even lower, but the return on equity will equal the return on capital for a company with no debt. Yeah? Because the only capital it's got is the equity. Yeah. Thanks, Alison. Do you want me to... Sorry to interrupt. I know you want to watch this presentation too, so thanks. Oh, you've got them. Okay, they've already done it. Okay, that's right, just leave it there. Okay, so primary, would you buy primary shares? Forget the shares. Would you buy primary as a business?
No.
Would you be a happy owner if you owned it for 10 years?
No.
You'd be frustrated and you'd want to do what? Sell it. So if you want to sell the business, why do you want to buy the shares? Okay, that's the point. Here it is in action. There's the profit 10 years ago. There's the profit now. There's the equity 10 years ago. There's the equity now. There's the debt 10 years ago. There's the debt now. Again, looks a lot like Qantas. Looks a lot like Amcor. And there's the return on equity. It's going up, but boy, oh boy, it's almost imperceptible. Now, it's right down the bottom there. You can hardly see it. Okay. What about the share price and the intrinsic value? There's the intrinsic value over 10 years for primary. And there's the share price. Benjamin Graham was right. Over long periods of time, price follows value. Okay. Avoiding these is easy. It's now easy for you to do. You only need a couple of numbers. You only need two annual reports, and it doesn't have to be 10 years ago. You can get one from 5 years ago if you want to, or 3 years ago, and you can see how that's changed over time. Just get it out of the annual report, or you can get shareholder, you know, the shareholder compendium from Morningstar, and that's in there. But again, it's all free. It's all available off the internet. You can just get it off the from the annual reports. So avoiding dud companies now is easy. And that's the first thing I wanted to talk to you about today. So let's talk about now. Let's go on and talk about the second thing that I wanted to show you. What does an extraordinary business actually look like? Here's a business called Oraton. Anyone heard of Oraton? Yep. Anyone got a glow mesh purse? Yep. Still got it. Sally McDonald told me, Sally McDonald's the CEO of the company, and I'm reasonably good friends with lots of CEOs, and Sally said to me that they now go on eBay and buy the glow mesh, the original glow mesh purses. So if you've got an older one and you want to sell it, you might be selling it back to Oraton. Okay? They're interested in owning them. I believe they also, Sally was also telling me they have a service now where if you've got an old one, and it's faded, and the glow mesh is faded, and it's worn out on the inside, they'll fix it up for you. Yeah, as a special service. And it's a whole, you know, it's a whole fan club thing going on with these purses. I have to remember, I remember being about this high, and my mum had one of those glow mesh, the gold glow mesh purses, and I can remember when she used to open it up, it was always about eye height. You know, I always get, have a look inside and see what was there for me. You know? Unfortunately, there wasn't very much, but that's all changed. So have a look at the numbers here. Very different to the previous businesses. Profits have gone from $1.6 million, and I've shown 2005 because that's when Sally joined the company. Sally joined the company actually in 2006. So the profit in 2005 was $1.7 million, and the profit now is forecast to be $22.75 million. That's big growth. Now, admittedly, off a small base, it's never going to be an Amcor, it's never going to be a Qantas, and that's probably a good thing. But it's never going to be a big business, or as big as those businesses. The equity has gone up as well. It's gone from $16 million to $27 million. So, yes, it's raised about $10.5 million, and that includes retained earnings as well. So it's raised $10.5 million of additional capital. But every dollar that's been injected into the business has generated almost $2. The return on equity, that $10.5 million of additional capital, has even increased the profit by $21 million. So the return on the additional money that's been put in is 198%. The return on equity in 2005 was 4.4%. It's now 80%. The average return on equity for Oraton before Sally joined the company was about 27%. The average return on equity since Sally joined the company has been 55%. And it's now, as you can see there, 80.7%. So it looks very, very good. They're entirely different numbers to the numbers that Amcor and Primary and Qantas were generating, aren't they? Completely different numbers. Oraton gets an A1 in my rating system. So I rate every single company in the Australian market on a quality score, and it gets an A1. It's right up there, top quality business. Okay, and have a look at the debt. It's fallen from $22 million to 5.6. Okay, so 21 divided by 10.55 gives us a return on equity, a return on new equity of 198%. And that's a terrific number. Not many companies are doing that kind of profitability. Okay, so let's have a look at it in a graphical format. There's the profit in 2005. There's the profit in 2010. There's the equity in 2005. There's the equity in 2010. There's the debt 5 years ago. And there's the debt today. And here's the return on equity. Okay, the reverse of the companies that we were showing earlier. Good business or bad business? I wonder why Warren Buffett said when he buys shares in a good business, he'd be quite happy for the stock market to be closed for 3 years or more. I wonder why he says that. He says that because he knows the performance of the business is such that he'd be quite happy for it to be unlisted. Even if the business wasn't listed on the stock market, he's happy to own that business. And so would you. You'd be happy. You'd be delighted to own this business. I suspect you'd want to make sure Sally doesn't go anywhere. Right? But you'd be happy to own this business. Okay. What about Graham's weighing machine? Does the price follow the intrinsic value? Well, here's the intrinsic value for Oryton since 2005. And there's the price. So it's following again. It's tracking again. You'll notice that it's at a bit of a discount at the moment. That doesn't mean you go out and rush. Don't go out. Oh, look, you can go out and buy Oryton, but just be prepared that the shares could fall 50% or more. I have no way of predicting that. I can tell you what I think Oryton is worth. I can't tell you what the share price is going to do. That's a job for smarter people than me. Okay. I think uncovering great businesses is easy. And hopefully you now see it as easy as well. And that's the second thing that I wanted to talk to you about today. Okay, so let's now move on to part three. The third thing I wanted to talk to you about is how to work out what to pay for these businesses. Okay. It's a company called Woolworths. Anyone heard of it? Okay, no one? Hands up if you never heard of Woolworths. Hands up, this is an interesting one. Hands up if you refuse to shop there and you'll never shop at Woolworths. Anyone in the room? One, two, three, four people. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? Five. Five people. Okay, I just want to let you know you're in the minority. Okay? I accept your life choice. I accept that, but you are in the minority. Okay, so there's a few other people who are shopping at Woolworths. We have a look at their numbers. Have a look at their numbers. Their profits have grown from $295 million in 2000 to $1.9 billion last year. Okay? So that's pretty good growth, yes? Okay. Equity has grown as well, and equity has grown a lot. $1.6 billion of equity back in 2000 to $6.8 billion of equity last year, so it's increased by 5.1. But if we divide this by this, we get this. 29.7% return on equity. Good result? Yeah, good result. Debt's up too, though. Have a look at that. $432 million to $3.1 billion. So debt's increased by $2.8 billion. But you'll be pleased to know that the working capital of Woolworths, and this is where you get into a little bit more detail, the working capital of Woolworths actually generates cash. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, they pay their suppliers over... Does anyone supply Woolworths? Hands up if you've got a business that supplies Woolworths. Okay, what are your terms with Woolworths?
90 days.
So you give Woolworths your stuff, and they give you your money in 3 months. It's an excellent arrangement, isn't it? Then they pay in 90 days after the promotion's over. Excellent. Okay. So thank you for that. And would you like to share what you supply them? Because if we could all buy it direct from you, you'll make more money. You stop doing it. Well, I can understand why. Okay, so Woolies, when you go to Woolies and you fill up your shopping trolley and, you know, you're weaving your way through all the other people who don't know where everything is and it's frustrating you, you know, you wheel your trolley up to the cash register, you know, you do that. And you buy all your goods and they scan them all in and the lady says, you know, the lady at the checkout says that'll be $398, you know, for your four teenage kids, you know, and you wish they would just eat less. You know, you don't say to her, here's my tax, here's the invoice, and, you know, and I'll pay you in 90 days. You've got to pay with your credit card or your FPOS card or your cash right then, straight away. So they get the cash for the product that you've sold immediately and they don't give it back to you for 3 months. It's a fantastic business to own. That's the kind of business you'd like to own. Not a good business to be a supplier to, right? But a great business to own from a purely capitalist perspective. I'm not making any remarks about the social impact of that or what they do to farmers or anything like that. Just from a purely capitalist perspective, they're the kind of numbers that you want. That's the kind of metrics that you're after. You want people to pay you now and you want to delay paying your suppliers as long as you can. Okay. So this business looks like a good business from its metrics. Okay, let's have a look at it graphically. Okay, there's the profit in 2009. Sorry, that's the equity, I think. That's the debt. That's the debt. There's the profit. There's the profit. Sorry, it's taking so long. There's the profit, and here's the return on equity. Okay, so that's a better picture. That's a bit not as good as Oraton, by the way, but it's a better picture it's certainly a better picture than Coles at the moment, Wesfarmers. It's a better picture than Primary and Qantas and Amcor. Okay, 29.7% return on equity is a good number. Okay, now we're going to value Woolworths. We're going to go through the steps involved in actually valuing Woolworths. Now, in valuing a company, there's a bunch of different formula that you can use. What I've done is combine the work of people like James Walter from the 1950s and 60s and Richard Simmons from back then, and also, actually a little bit more recently, and also the stuff from Warren Buffett in the 1980s. But most of Buffett's work in the 1980s, the stuff that he divulged in the 1980s, actually appears to be very similar to the work of some academics back in the 1950s and 60s. And you can get it yourself if you want to go and pay $33 for the Journal of Finance articles. Just make sure you download the right ones. Otherwise, it'll be more expensive than my book. You should just get the book because the right ones are in it. Okay. All right. There were two streams of thinking in the 1950s, and I mentioned this last night. There's a lot of argument about whether or not dividends were relevant in the calculation of intrinsic value. And there were two streams of thought. Miller and Modigliani wrote some papers, and largely Miller, and said that dividends were irrelevant in the calculation of the intrinsic value of a business. It didn't matter whether the company's profits were paid out as a dividend or kept. It made no difference to the value of the company. Well, that's only true under certain conditions. It's only true when the return on equity of the company is the same as your required return, the return that you want for investing in that business. Because if you can get 10% anywhere and the business is generating 10%, well, then it doesn't matter whether it gives you the money as a dividend or keeps it, you're going to get 10%. So the value of the business doesn't change. What James Walter said and what Gordon said is that dividends do matter. They're vital in the calculation of the intrinsic value of a company. Because if you can get 10% outside of this room and this business is only generating 5%, well, you actually don't want that business if it keeps the money. But if it pays it out, you actually wouldn't mind owning it, maybe. Because it gives you all the money as a dividend, you can go and reinvest it at 10% somewhere else. So you'd pay more for the business if it paid out the earnings as a dividend than if it kept the money, if it retained the profits. So a business generating a low rate of return on equity, a rate of return on equity that's less than what you can get elsewhere, it's worth less if it keeps the money. It's worth more if it pays it out. And that's precisely what James Walter's papers, written in 1956, actually say. Okay. So here's the numbers that we need. And that, by the way, That's why in your notes I've actually given you the some stuff from 19. This is Benjamin Graham. I've given you a paper, and you'll notice that see that title page? That was hand drawn by Benjamin Graham. And over on the right hand side, if you're wondering what those circles are, they're actually the coffee stains. Okay, that's the original document. Okay, well, it's photocopied for your benefit. But that's it. He talks about, there's some interesting work that he did around the same time, and his stuff there is about how to think about prices, how to think about share prices and the movements of the stock market and how to separate yourself from those things. I think there's a lot of really good stuff that came out of the mid-20th century in terms of what we should be doing today, but which has been usurped by a lot of the work we talked about last night. Okay, so here are the numbers that we need. We want the shares on issue, 1.2 billion shares on issue. Shareholders' equity, $6.8 billion. Return on equity, 26.9%. We've got that from the profit divided by the equity. The earnings per share of $1.49. The dividends per share of $1.04, which gives us our payout ratio, about 70%. and our required return. Now, Warren Buffett said to use 10%. And here's the quote. At the 1994 Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, Warren Buffett said, in a world of 7% long-term bond rates, we'd certainly want to think we were discounting the after-tax stream of cash. So he's not using pre-tax earnings. He's using after-tax cash flow. Okay, it says it right there. We'd want to be discounting the after-tax stream of cash at a rate of at least 10%. Very important, at least 10%. And more recently, when bond rates have gone down, he said, you know, we don't follow them down. So let's use 10% for today's exercise, but notice that he said at least. And that tells me, or suggests to me, that he might be using different rates for different companies. Okay. So here are the numbers, here are the calculations. So we've got our equity per share, which is the shareholder's equity divided by the shares on issue. And for 2009, that's $5.53. And for 2010, that's $5.98. We've got our payout ratio, which is the dividends per share divided by the earnings per share of 70%. We've got our return on equity, which is the earnings per share divided by the equity per share. So the earnings per share is here. Divide it by that number or that number, and we get 27.5%. And our required return, we're going to use Buffett's 10%. So they're the numbers that we want. Okay. Now, this table is a table I basically constructed from two formulae. One formula is James Walter, and the formula you can get that formula. And the other formula is Warren Buffett's formula. Okay, and that basic formula is in the book. And it's from that formula, I talk about it in the book, that I've derived this table. So what I do is I go down the table and I say, okay, I want to start on a 10% required return. That's what we decide we're going to use. And we're going to assume this 27.5% return on equity. So that gives us a multiple of 2.75. You can see how we've got that. 10%, 27.5%, 2.75. Okay. The other one is the growth multiplier, so that's for the income component of the formula, and this is for the growth component of the formula. We get 6.177, and that's from the Walter Simmons model. So all of this, again, is in the public domain. Okay, so if we take the equity of the company, this is step one in part C, if you like. If we take $5.98 of equity and multiply it by the income multiplier, we get $16.45. And if we take the equity and multiply it by the growth multiplier, we get $36.94. Now, they're not the valuations yet. We've got to multiply those by how much income and how much is for growth. So that's the next step. So we've got a 70% payout ratio. So we multiply the income component by the payout ratio, which is the proportion of the earnings that are paid out as a dividend. That's the income multiplier. So that gives us $11.51. And the remainder is the growth bit. That's the implied growth rate. Okay, 30%. So 30% is retained. So $36.94 multiplied by 30% gives us $11.08. We simply add the two together. $11.51 plus $11.08 gives us $22.59. That's the intrinsic value of Woolworths for 2009. So, 2010, you'll notice the intrinsic value goes up. Warren Buffett says, you want to buy businesses whose intrinsic value is rising at a satisfactory rate, quote unquote. Is that a satisfactory rate? Yep. Is it going up? What's the rate of growth in intrinsic value from 22.59 to 26? It's going up about $4, so somewhere between 10 and 20%. Yeah, not quite 20%. Okay, so that's a reasonable increase in intrinsic value. So we said earlier it was a good business, didn't we? Because it's generating a very good rate of return on equity. Okay, we also noticed that the return on additional equity seems to be good. And we noticed that the intrinsic value of this business is rising at a satisfactory rate. So it ticks most of our boxes. But if you read the press, if you read today's press about Woolworths, when I say today, I mean, you know, the Royal Today, you know, the last few weeks, is the press positive towards Woolies or negative? Pretty negative, isn't it? What are some of the things that the press is saying about Woolworths? Growth is slowing. Coles is taking over. You know, we're re-energised. All the quotes are, it's always about the re-energised and the reinvigorated Coles. It's buying market share. So what are institutional investors doing? Switching out of defensives into cyclicals. We talked about that last night, didn't we? That's a sensible thing to do. No? Isn't it? Okay, so what we've got is a business that we now know is a good business. We've got a business for which we now know the intrinsic value of this business. We like the fact that its intrinsic value is rising at a satisfactory rate. And the icing on the cake is the rest of the market hates it. Because only then do you get the opportunity to buy it at a discount to its intrinsic value. So what I'm looking for when I invest my money, and I'm not advocating that you do this, I'm just telling you what I do, I look for good businesses that tick all the boxes, and then I try and calculate the intrinsic value going out a few years, and I want to see that that's rising at a satisfactory rate. I want to see that it's risen in the past as well. So I want to see a demonstrated track record, another quote from Buffett, and I want to buy it at a big discount to its intrinsic value. And if I can tick all those boxes, I'm happy for the stock market to be closed for 3 years. Now, I'm happy to come up here and talk to you and not even look at the stock market. Okay, let's have a look if Benjamin Graham was right. So there's the intrinsic value for Woolworths over the last 10 years, and there is the price of Woolworths over the last 10 years. And sure enough, as Benjamin Graham promised it would, the share price tends to follow the intrinsic value. Okay, so now working out what to pay for a company is relatively easy, I think is incredibly simple. And that's the third thing that I wanted to talk to you about today. There's one more thing before we finish up. Here's four companies that I think are really good businesses. These are companies, grab your pens, quick, write them down. Don't go out and buy them, okay, because they might not be cheap. Okay, they might not be cheaper than their intrinsic value. But there's four companies that you can go and have a look at yourselves and find, go and have a look at the annual reports and see whether or not you can extract that data and do those calculations. Okay? That calculation that I showed you earlier, the return on equity calculation, happens to be the very same calculation that Warren Buffett talks about. It's also one of the only things that Jim Chanos uses, one of the most important things that Jim Chanos uses at Kinnikos, he's the biggest short seller in the world, okay, it was the ratio that he looked at to determine that Enron was no good, okay, and he shorted Enron and that put him on the map. So this is a ratio that's used by some of the smartest and most successful investors in the world. There's no reason why you shouldn't be using it as well. I'm going to finish up there. I want to thank you very much for your attention today. Do we have any time, Alison, for questions, or are we out of time?
You've got 5 minutes.
Got about 5 minutes?
At the microphone.
Okay. You have to be at the microphone to ask a question. Before we do that, guys, thank you very much for your attention. I've enjoyed your company yesterday and today. I'm going to head back shortly to Sydney, but I hope to be a part of your investing journey in the future. And look forward to seeing you again. Fill out those forms if you want a copy of the book sent to you this week, and I'll see you sometime in the future. Thanks again.
Roger, I don't have any shares in Qantas, but the information you've given is a snapshot in time.
Yep.
Which means perhaps in 2 years' time, it might be a different situation.
Yes, it's a great question. So the question is, well, I'm looking at a period of time for this business. And in 2 years' time, Qantas might be a very different business. My question to you, what's your name?
Brad?
Brendan. So my response to that, Brendan, is that what makes you think it's going to be any different? What is Qantas going to be able to do differently to what it does today and what it's done for the last decade? You know, that's the question you've got to ask before you just hope that it's going to change. All right, no problem.
Have you valued Berkshire Hathaway and
yes.
Would you buy it today?
Okay, the question is, have I valued Berkshire Hathaway? Yes. I valued the B shares just after they split and I wrote a piece for Alan Kohler on that very subject. Now, it was a few months ago. And at that time, the answer was no. They were still a little bit expensive. Yeah. Okay. G'day.
Hi, Roger. If you have to sell a business, what do you judge your selling points on?
Oh, great. You need to buy the book. There's a chapter I've called Getting Out. There's five reasons why you might sell. Now, let me share one of them with you. Okay, one of the five reasons. Warren Buffett in 2003 said he made a big mistake. In 2003, at the annual general meeting, he said, I made a big mistake not selling some of our larger holdings when their share prices were much higher and their intrinsic values were much lower. You might ask me today that now that the reverse has occurred, what I was thinking. I asked myself that very same question. So what he said, and prior to 2003, many of you probably still believe that he always said, there's no reason to sell a business. I'm going to hold them forever. Well, after 2003, he's changed tack. He's delivered on what he promised. He sold PetroChina when it reached intrinsic value. He sold Johnson & Johnson to buy into Goldman Sachs. So he's been practicing what he now preaches, and that is selling when prices are above or at intrinsic value. Okay. So my view of this is, the question that will come back invariably is, how far above intrinsic value does the price need to be before you'll sell? My response to that is, well, I don't actually care about how much above intrinsic value it is. What I care about is how many years do I have to wait for the intrinsic value to catch up to the current price. If it's 1 year, I'll probably keep holding it. But if it's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years that my estimate of intrinsic value takes to catch up to the current price, well, I'm probably going to sell it. Okay, so that's one of the five reasons for selling. There's four more. Okay. I look forward to hearing your feedback on those other four. Okay. All right. Another question. Thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Okay. Oh, no, I'm in trouble now. No,
I'll ask you a question, Roger, as long as you post it, the answer is not no.
Okay. Right. Right.
Okay.
Yes.
For the older investors that have been around for a long time and have got all your Borals and Amcors and Qantas and whatever in their stock, can you make a case to hold them in your portfolio if your holding holding cost is zero or less?
Okay, it's a
great
question.
And you've got a tax problem if you do actually sell them at
$7
or whatever.
Let me answer that two ways. So you've got the first part of the question is related to opportunity cost. So holding onto them costs you money if you're not in good businesses. Right? Because good businesses can generate higher returns. So that's the first part. The second part is the tax consequences. Often you'll hear the argument put forward that, if you sell, your after-tax receipts are equivalent to, let's say the share price, let's say you bought at $10 and the shares have gone to $20, okay, and you're on a 50% tax rate, well, the shares have to drop to $15 for you to have the same after-tax position, right? So a lot of people will say, well, I'm not going to sell at $20 because I don't think they're going to fall to $15. And they have to go to $15 and I've got to buy them back at $15 to be in the same after-tax position. And then invariably they fall to $15. And then at $15, people say, right, I made $5 profit. So they have to fall to $12.50 on a 50% tax rate for me to be in the same after-tax position. I don't think they're going to fall to $12.50 because they've already gone from 20 to 15, so I'm going to hang on at 15. And then they go to 12.50. And then at 12.50, you can say, well, on a 50% tax rate, they have to fall to $11.25 or $75 in order for me to be in the same after-tax position. So I'm not going to sell because they won't fall that far. And eventually they get back to $10, and you know what you do? You sell them because there's no tax consequences. Or you might do worse, wait till they go to $5, and then you've got a tax loss, you can carry that forward. Awesome. Great way to invest. Yeah. So that wasn't a no, but it wasn't a yes either. Yeah? There's four reasons for selling. Yeah, they're in the book. Okay. Okay, how much time we got? One more?
That's really nice.
No, we're done.
O'clock.
Okay.
We've got to go.
Guys, sorry, go ahead, Alison.
Excellent. Thank you, Roger, as always. And
thank you.